Okay, here we are. This Mishnah at the bottom of Ayin Omer Aleph, which we started last week, has this idea of Meita Av Lo Nitrakna Reshut Labal. In the case of the Nara Murasa, when the Arus, the betrothed husband, and the father have co-signing over the daughter fiance's Nidarim. So if the father dies, the prospective husband, the Baal, not really the Baal, he's the Arus, does not, lo nitrakna, the father's rights are not voided to the husband. Metabal nitrakna reshut la'av, because as we've said now twice, why?
Because she was never married. I mean, they were married.
Yeah, so she goes back to just being binu reha beit avia. But then the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, "Beze yafe koach ha'av mikoach habal." Then this is how the father, who can reacquire full rights, there's a scenario by which the father can reacquire full rights, is superior to the. To the husband, but davar acher yafe koach habal mikoach haav shehabal mefir beveger vaav eno mefir beveger. So we explain the pshat in the Mishnah. How do we explain that?
For someone who's already beveger.
Yeah. So in other words, the Mishnah at least kifshuta seems to be about. In other words, the father has greater rights, except his rights are. Have a deadline. When she turns 12 and a half, whether she's engaged or not, his rights, his father's rights expire. The husband, however, has the ability to even cancel the nidarim of his full-grown adult wife. However, this is not how
she's doing. That's the essence of what he's
doing. That's the essence of what he's doing, but that, in that way, the husband's rights are greater than the fathers. But this is not how the Mishnah, this is not how the Gemara learns the Mishnah. This is not how the Gemara learns the Mishnah.
Let's have a different scenario. The girl is 12 years old and she gets married, fully married. So the father doesn't have rights anymore and the husband has rights.
Right.
She's 12 and a quarter, the husband dies. She goes back to the father's house. Does he want to regain any of his rights? Or no?
So skip back to where we were in the Gemara. From the two dots. Hechidami. What's the case? Ilema shikitsha keshehi na'ara uvagra. Hold on a second. Hechidami. In other words, in what case can the husband cancel the nedarim of the arusa when she has already become an adult? In other words, the Gemara learns the Mishnah differently. The Gemara says, no. The Mishnah is talking about the nara amurasa. That even when she's mu'urasa, the husband can cancel the nedarim. It's not a case of when she's a fully married woman, but even when a fully married woman, even when a fully grown woman, when an adult woman is a mu'ureset, the husband might have exclusive rights over her. Normally, we say.
Wait, she's a Nara or a Bogeret?
No, so in other words, here she's a Bogeret.
Okay.
Achrei she bagra.
The father is out of the picture now.
Well, he becomes engaged when she's a Nara Murasa.
Okay.
But at a certain point during their engagement, she hits 12 and a half, and she becomes a bogeret. At that point, the father loses his rights. But since she's not fully married, the husband has no rights, and in theory, she's on her own. But in a certain case, Sehechidami, Rashi says, Debaal mefir beveger. Ilema shekidsha keshina ara. Uvagra. Michte mita motsia. Uvagrut motsia mirshut haav. When she's engaged, she gets engaged at 12, but the engagement goes on for more than a half a year. If she hits 12 and a half during the engagement, she leaves the father's reshut. Mamita lo nikratna. So what happens when she leaves the father's reshut, or when the father dies?
Why or?
Oze.
She doesn't really leave the father's reshut if she's not fully married yet.
When she hits 12, when the father dies, lo nitrak na reshut labal. When she hits 12 and a half, and Mela, the father, loses his rights over her nadarim, lo nitrak na labal. Why? Because he's not a bal. He's the arus. He only has rights after the chuppah. Af bagrut lo nikrakna reshut labal. Right? So hey chidami, what's the case that the bal, the arus, let's be careful about the language here. Let's be more careful than the, let's be more careful than the Gemara itself. Well, you have three of a kind, three guys in blue shirts. You're the joke a while. So af bagrut lo nitrak na reshut labal. Ela shekidsha keshehi bogeret. So the Gemara says, no, what's the case? He gets engaged to her when she's already a bogeret. The father is out of the picture, nadarm-wise. He's probably in the picture in terms of paying for the wedding. But in nadarm-wise, the father's out of the picture. And the shekidsha kashi bogeret. Ha tanina chada zimna. But we've already taught that case one time. Where do we teach that case? In this Mishnah. This Mishnah, which is on Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Beis. This is the Mishnah we started looking at last week. Bogeret Sheshahata Shnei Masar Chodesh, or an Almana Shloshim Yom. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ho'ilu Vala Chayav B'Mizonateha, Yafer. Forget the father, forget the Naira Murusar, regular case, a normal case, girl doesn't get married at 12, doesn't get engaged at 12, she gets married at, I don't know, what age is your
Almana?
Almana is a widow.
Yeah, right? So how is her husband Chayav B'Mizonateha?
Not her dead husband, her second husband, new husband.
Oh, husband.
Right?
My daughter will be 16.
16 already? It's time. So your 16-year-old daughter, your 26-year-old daughter gets engaged. There's this little narrow window between the time you say, oh, it's too young, and oh, it's too old. Whatever that day is, that's the day she gets engaged. But the father, this is not the case of a Nara Murasa. The husband, no one has rights over it. She has exclusive rights over her own Nadarim until the Chuppah. In those days, they would do the Kiddushin before the Nisuin. How long would there be typically?
A year.
sometimes less, sometimes more.
Shashata is, means she got engaged and she's waiting.
Waiting. She's on hold. Gotcha. Right? She's on. They're waiting to set the date.
But the new husband is already chayav.
After 12 months of kiddushin,
erusin,
kiddushin, same thing. After 12 months, well, what happens? They get engaged. It's not like today. Today you're getting, you say, will you marry me? Even if you give a diamond ring, right? Which fewer and fewer people do, for reasons that might be obvious. Your kids got married. They all got diamond rings? Real diamonds?
From
grandparents. Oh, look at the grandparents. Yeah. So those grandparent diamond rings are going around. I'm the...
That's what I told Amy.
I'm the third generation using my engagement ring. My son already is... They say it's the curse of the Sachs diamond. It comes with Mr. Sachs. So you get engaged, even with the diamond ring. Halachically, this is meaningless beyond, you know, the fact that promises are made and sometimes financial obligations are taken. But these two people have no halachic zika between them. They break the engagement. There's no... She can go marry a kohen the next day. Right? Nothing has changed in their personal status. That was not the case with Kiddushin. Kiddushin, you were... It wasn't that you were a rivaka plus. You were married minus. Right? You were closer to being an Ashes Ish than you were to being a rivaka. What?
Oselano
at that, right. So if they break the engagement, it's not breaking the engagement. It's breaking a marriage. It's breaking at least the half a marriage. Right? And you need to get.
And meanwhile, no one else can take care of
it. And meanwhile, she's...
She can't marry... If she needs, right. She needs her husband's financial support,
right.
She can't...
So the presumption is that during the halachic engagement, she's still... Daddy is still... She's still living off the old man. So they get engaged, and they now set a date. It goes on and on and on and on. So at a certain point, to be fair to her, the husband takes over the financial obligations of Mizonot, right, of caring for her. Right? So the Mishnah says, Rabbi Eliezer says in the Mishnah, that after 12 months for a Bogeret, for a Rivaka, after 30 days for an Almana, who typically would have had a shorter engagement. When an Almana is getting remarried, she would have typically had a shorter engagement. There it was more typical for only 30 days. So when the normal period of time ends, it's either, you know, put up or shut up. Right? Either marry her, make a chuppah, or at least they have to start paying. Since, Rabbi Eliezer says, since the husband from that point has to start paying, so then he acquires rights to be mevatel her nedarim, even though she's only an arusa, but she is a bogeret. So our Gemara says, here's a case of yafeh koach ha'av, koach habal, mikoach ha'av.
It would make even more sense to say if it is talking about the case of the because then you can say, here's a real difference between the father and the husband, not just, you know.
This Mishnah is certainly not about a Nara Murasa. How do you know this Mishnah is not the Mishnah and Anayin Gimel? How do you know the Mishnah Anayin Gimel is not about Nara Murasa?
No, we said it. We learned from this Mishnah.
It says Bogeret.
Right. I'm saying, no. The Mishnah, our Mishnah is Bogeret, the beggar. But I'm saying that if you want to really compare something that the father, that the husband really has, the Arus really has over the husband, over the father, you need to compare them at a comparable scenario, not like he has married over when she's 25. If you tell you that they got engaged when she was 12, and at her 12 and a half birthday, suddenly he still has. Or let's say they got engaged when she was 11. Okay? 11 and a half. They get engaged when she was 11 and a half, and so for 12 to 12, you know, then they're both responsible. But at 12 and a half, she's suddenly, the 12 months have passed, he's responsible for her, father no longer is, and he is, then there, and that's a different scenario. That's when you can actually see some advantage that the husband has a father.
So that's what we thought the Mishnah meant.
No, but it could still go along with this Mishnah if it's saying that just.
No, but the Mishnah in Ayin Gimel is not talking about a Nara, right? She gets engaged when she's already a Bogeret. The engagement goes on long enough that his financial obligations kick in, but with the with great obligation comes great power, say the Chacham. But. What?
Responsibility.
Said it here. It's, okay, with financial responsibility comes great power. So, said it. But our Mishnah is clearly talking about Anara Marasa, because it's talking about when she's Anara Marasa when she becomes Mikudeshet. That's what we thought.
I'm saying it still can be. Even right. If you learn from the Mishnah, the focus could still be on the Nara Marasa.
No, and as we thought that the Mishnah was talking about a different case, unconnected to Nara Marasa. Right? So I've said this, you're already giving an answer. Right? So Tanina Chadazimna. But if it's a case, it's talking about what's a scenario where the husband has exclusive rights over the Nadarim of his Arusa. Well, how does it? How do you think that our Mishnah on Ayin, Amud Aleph, can be talking about an Arusa, not a Felicia?
Because. Yes, it's referencing this Mishnah here.
Beseder, but that's not how we understood it. We assumed it's not talking about an Arusa, but about a full Eishes Ish. Right? That was our assumption. And that was the Gemara's initial assumption. Now the Gemara says, no, it's talking about an Arusa. So the Gemara says, Beseder. But then it's redundant to the Mishnah and Ayin Gimel. Right? What do you need to teach the same din in two separate Mishnayas? The Gemara generally operates under this assumption that the Mishnah does not repeat itself unnecessarily. So when you have two Mishnayos that seem to be saying the same din, so then what do?
You have to try to understand it.
So there's a few different ways to approach the problem. Either they're really teaching two separate dinim. Your Havamina, that they're teaching the same thing, is mistaken. That this Mishnah is talking about this case and that Mishnah is talking about that case. It's the opposite impulse of what the Gemara often tries to do between two Braitiot. In other words, you have two Braitiot that seem to contradict each other. So the Gemara's like heartfelt impulse is to always try, wherever possible, to resolve Machlok. To show how no, there it's not a machloket because
this case is
apples and oranges, right? This is talking about this case, and that's talking about that case. Or it's not a machloket because you misunderstood something about one of the two braitiot, and if you understand it properly, then they fit in hunky dory. Here it's the opposite. You have two mishnayot that seem redundant, so one way to resolve is saying no, they really are talking in two separate cases. Or,
well, in this particular
case, or why might you have two Mishnayot here, nearly adjacent Mishnayot? Either to clarify.
In this case, you could say, there's a machloket. Maybe it's coming to tell us that the halakha, our Mishnah is coming to tell us that the halakha is like it really is, or not like
Hachamim. Or, alternatively,
each Mishnah is presenting a different scenario for the same
one,
giving different cases.
Okay, okay.
Different details within the case.
But, or to prevent you from being led to a false maskana. If we only taught you the first Mishnah, you would have only known one. This is similar to what you're saying, so. You would have known A, but you may not have understood B. And the second Mishnah is rounding out so that you... Now, all of it parenthetically, this of course ignores the fact that that there are plenty of Mishnayot that are repeated. That there are Mishnayot that are repeated word for word. Right? There are times where Yehuda HaNasi did cut and paste. Not cut and paste, copy and paste.
But,
Yeah, usually, yeah, always in different Masechtos.
So that,
okay, right.
Exact same
right.
Thing.
So right. Right. But within one Masechta, you don't encounter this. What do you want to say?
I'm going
to
say, Brachot and Tzachim, the famous stuff, the one you met during the Nagano.
Harayani Kaben Shirim Shana?
It's got me time by the law.
That appears as a Mishnah Psochim? The Gemara quotes it. I don't think it appears as a Mishnah Psochim. Saha! Tanina ha zimna ha boget shalom yubin. Now the Gemara says, Gufa kasha. Parenthetically, the Gemara now here addresses something. We're back to our Gemara, but the Gemara here parenthetically asks a question about, before it gets around to answering the question of why does that, aren't these two Mishnayot redundant, right? It parenthetically asks a question about the Mishnah on Ayin Gimel. Now, you know this phrase, Gufa. Gufa means usually what? Right, the thing itself, the gufa inyan, right? So usually gufa is the reset button. You know, like when the Gemara gets off on a few tangents. Yeah, perhaps you've encountered this. So gufa is a technical term in the Gemara to say, okay, reset. We're now going, having gotten off from tangent A to tangent B to tangent C, we're now going back to the original main trunk of this discussion before it started branching off. Here, the gufa is not exactly like that. Because here we've gotten off track by bringing in an outside source, but gufa, we're going to ask a question about the gufa inyan that's introduced from Daf Ayin Gimel. So ha gufa kasha. But that Mishnah itself is problematic. Before we start trying to resolve the Mishnah on Ayin and the Mishnah on Ayin Gimel, the Mishnah on Ayin Gimel is problematic. Now, when you get to Ayin Gimel, we might ask this. You mean you might anticipate the Gemara will ask the same thing over there? So, Hagufa Kasha, Amarta Habogeret Shishata Shnei Masachodesh, Bivogeret Lama Li Shnei Masachodesh. Why is it 12? Why is what's this 12-month period thing? That after 12 months have passed from the Kiddushin, that the Bishloshin Yom Sagila. What do you need 12 months for? How long does it take to make a wedding? I don't know. I mean, and it's not. Right? How long does it take her to get ready for a wedding? So, Bogeret. So, 30 days should be enough. This is the Gemara on Nun Zayin. The Gemara Nun Zayin in Masechet Ksubot asks this question. Nun Zayin on the bed. Asks this question about how long, what's reasonable? How long can it, how long does it take to make a wedding? What's reasonable to expect? Right? Because the opposite is also true. Because here we're talking about the husband is, right, getting cold feet. And so at a certain point you say, put up or shut up. But also could be the opposite. They get engaged and she's not ready to set the date. So she can claim, you can't pressure me. I have to get, make a wedding. You have to get a dress. You have to get the flowers. You have to get the video. You have to choose the menu. You have to find an apartment. You have to whiten your teeth. You have to lose 10 pounds. You have to, whatever it is. Right? So how long is it reasonable? This could go on forever. So how long is it reasonable? So the Gemara suggests that maybe 30 days is enough to plan a wedding. So Tani Bogeret Shishida Yud Bet Chodesh Mikol Makom Kasha. Right. Oh no, I'm sorry, skip. Bogeret B'Shloshim Yom Sagila Tani Bogeret V'Sheshahata Yud Bet Chodesh. Right. In other words, it changes the language of the Mishnah. Instead of reading it Bogeret Sheshahata, the Gemara suggests that the proper way or the proper meaning of the Mishnah is Bogeret V'Sheshahata.
So we're saying that there's a case where when a certain period of time has elapsed, after the Garrett and the Russian got married, so then there's financial obligations of the husband.
Because if you add the letter Bob, make it and then it's a shares of Garrett before she got married. Because she's a Garrett and 12 months passed.
No.
She's a Bulgarian, 12 months past.
Yeah, I'm not sure you're reading it correctly, but what would be the difference?
The difference is if you told me she's a Bulgarian and 12 months past, that means she was a Bulgarian.
When she, yeah?
Before it. If you take out the word and, it means you could interpret it to mean that she became a Bulgarian someplace along the line.
Oh, okay. So look at Rashi. Tani Bulgarian v'chule. Hai kidine v'hai kidine yafir. In other words, really should we know what happened. They got engaged before she was 12 and a half. And then, a month before the year was up, she becomes a Bogeret. Right? So in other words, really those 30 days. The Gemara over there asks a question, yeah, but can't you start getting ready, even if you're 11 and a half when you get engaged, can't you already start getting ready? But the idea is that, in other words, it's not necessarily 12 months of her being a Bogeret. But b'chol ofen, in either way, she's a Bogeret. So in both cases, you have a case of a husband being an arus being mayfair, the nedarim of his arusa, who's a bogeret. So it's still redundant. This, either way, even with the question asked and answered, right? You still have the redundancy. Mikol makom kasha. Eboyis ema. So there's two ways to think about it.
At this point at which she becomes Bulgarian and she's no longer an issue to her father anyway.
Right.
But she has, but the final nisuin hasn't taken place.
So she's on her own.
But we're talking about this period before the nisuin has taken
place.
Right. Right. So what obligations does the Arus have for honor?
I mean, you know, technically nothing until the period of time has passed.
No, so when the period of time has passed, even if the nisuin itself hasn't taken place,
right,
he has those obligations.
Then the dinim is coming, yeah. That's the point. And since he takes on, since after a certain amount of time, he the financial obligations are imposed on him, so therefore he's entitled. So there's two ways to answer the problem. One, David already anticipated. Eboy is ema hocha dafka uvogeret ktani hatam. Uvogeret ktani hatam mishum de boy. If Luge Rabbi Eliezer Rabbonon, Senachinami. The two cases are talking about the same case, but in our Mishnah Daf Ayin, it's Dafka. Dafka here means kind of like this is the home address. You know, sometimes it's what Chaim Soloveitchik used to call the controlling sugya. You know, sometimes a sugya, not a Mishnah, but a sugya in the Gemara is repeated, not word for word, but it's in other words, there's one discussion of it in Kiddushin, and there's one discussion of it in Gittin. There's one discussion of some topic in Dine Momonos in Bava Metzia, and it appears again in Sanhedrin. So the question is, which is the controlling sugya? Which is the home address for this topic? And which is the ancillary? And this will answer questions of if there's a difference of nuance, if there's a difference of angle, if there's a difference of opinion between the home address, the controlling sugya, the dafka, and the ancillary, the sidecar, which one should take, which one should take precedence? There was a case recently, the Supreme Court thing recently. The same kind of thing. Whatever it was. That there was one case that was in one realm of law. Listen to this on that Supreme Court podcast from Slate. It was a case that was in... I forget the case. It was one case that was in one realm of law, but it had implications for another realm of law. But in other words, the question is, how do you look at it? Is this a case comes before the court to say, is this essentially a case about, take Citizens United, is this essentially a case about campaign finance, or is it essentially a case about the First Amendment? Right? Is it a case about free speech? Well, depending upon how you determine what is this case really about, it will point you in a different direction jurisprudentially. I mean, or if you want to be cynical, you'll say you already, you know, shot the arrow and now you're going to paint the target around it. You're led to one belief or the other. But let's imagine people, at least the Chachamim, are operating with integrity. And this will lead people in different directions in terms of finding a thing. So here we say, no, the home address for this is Bedafka and Dafayin. Right? And Anichinami, we're talking about a Bogeret. So why do you have to repeat the essentially the same idea on Dafayin Gimel? To tell you that Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim have a difference of opinion. Rabbi Eliezer says, this is a din for Rabbi Eliezer, that he and only he have this idea that the husband has rights over the woman. The Chachamim say in Achinami, after 12 months, the husband takes on financial obligations, but with great financial responsibility, does not necessarily come great power. They were DC Comics people, not Marvel Comics people. Right? That's the essential difference here between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chacham, DC or Marvel, right? And Achinami, but until she is fully married, the husband has no rights, even if he has the financial obligations. And that's why there's a difference. Then the Gemara offers another suggestion. Iboy Eseima, Bogeret Dafka, La'aydi D'Nesiv Resha, B'zeh Nesiv Sefa, Nami Bozeh. And Achinami. Or the Mishnah on Ayin Gimel is the home address. And our Mishnah is here for a different reason. For a kind, there's another impulse that drives the composition of the Mishnayot. And that is essentially a literary impulse.
You want to balance it.
Right? The Mishnayot, perhaps because the Mishnayot were originally an oral tradition. And part of an oral tradition is the composition of the oral text before it's written down will be crafted in such a way as to make it memorable. That's why, you know, the other great oral texts of antiquity that later were written down and passed on to us, things like Homer, things like the Odyssey, right? How are they composed?
Some sort of even rhyme or
in verse. In verse. Why? Because verse is easy to remember. Right? Think of rhymes you learned as a little kid that are still with you.
Well, not always rhymes the way we call it, like, ending the words.
Say there, but in other words, it had a literary, right? I mean, think of things that you learned as a kid that, you know, that are still with you, that, you know, you wouldn't have been able to remember. I mean, not just little nursery rhymes, but, you know. Right. But other prose works that you read as a child, you can't recall the same way that you can on Green Eggs and Ham. right? In first grade, I mean, it's you know, today kids don't do, schools don't do this, kids don't do it. In first grade, we had to memorize the at least the opening stanza, maybe the whole thing, of The Village Blacksmith.
Yeah.
Longfellow's poem. Under the spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands. The smith, the mighty man, is he with large and sinewy hands and arms as strong as iron bands.
Here's a line by the roof bridge that writes the flood.
What? First grade. First grade.
The flag to April's breeze unfurled, the die in the shot.
So,
this is 12th grade.
Okay.
That's 12.
Excellent. So, because the point being that there's certain ways to construct a text which will make it sticky in the mind. One of the ways the Mishnah does not generally employ rhyme, but one of the ways the Mishnah does it is to create these kinds of structures.
Is there a Mishnah in the Mishnah? Hmm? Is there a Mishnah? It's Mishnah. So basically, it's like laid out. You can see how. So you can, first of all, you can learn this right now. You can see. You know, it has like the you can see where the rhythm would be. It's like
A, B, there. Yeah.
Well, like, you know, it'll be like, not exactly rhyme, but like similar word endings or whatever, and then it's easier to remember.
Yeah.
Somebody came with a sheet out.
So here, what's the parallelism here? Since we mentioned a way in which the Koach Ha'av is greater than the Koach Ha'bal, the Mishnah also mentions a way that the Koach Ha'bal is greater than the Koach Ha'av. Since the Reisha is about, you know, A is greater than B, so then it's natural to mention B is greater than A, right? Even though B is greater than A has a home address elsewhere, an Ayin Gimel.
And it's also related, by the way, to what you said before of needing to clarify, because if you didn't have the Seifa, you might think that as a principle,
oh,
that the father overrides is as an advantage over the husband in all cases, and that would be mistaken.
Except in one more Mishnah, you're going to get to it on in two more Mishnahs. You're going to get to it on Ayin Gimel. I'm not sure that alone would be reason. The Tanoim could have assumed that if you know a Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek, you know the Mishnah at the end of the Perek. The fact that our Gemaras are printed this way is a convention of the printers. You remember we learned Sanhedrin, the first Mishnah, the first Perek of Sanhedrin, for some odd historical reason. All of the Mishnayot are put up front. Because what do we do? We have a Mishnah, right? Let's say the Mishnah has 4 points in it. So like, yeah, that's what this convention of like the two dots, and then you have like a headline from the Mishnah, and then you go on. And when you exhaust all 4 points in the Mishnah, you'll have a whole nother chunk of Mishnah. And that's only just the way the Agamaras are printed, right? When the Amoraim were discussing it, they didn't think of it in that way, right? They didn't think of it that way. And Adrabah, our division of the Mishnayot within any one chapter of Mishnayot into individual Mishnayot, That's also a later convention. The Tanoim didn't think of a Nedarim Perek Yud Mishnah Gimel as opposed to Mishnah Dalet. The Mishnayot were all in one big chunk within any one Perek. Right? It should have been apparent how they would be divvied up, that they deal with related but distinct topics.
Well, clearly, in our figure, realizing they didn't view it as one big chunk, because otherwise it wouldn't have made sense to compare something later and something earlier. Because
no, but within any given perek, it wasn't random, right? The order of the points within one perek of Mishnayot was deliberate, but the division, and that's why, by the way, you can look at the way the Mishnayot are conventionally divided into, the Prakim are conventionally divided into separate Mishnayot in the set of Mishnah for universal reference. That if you look at Perek Yud, Mishnah Dalid, it'll be the same Mishnah in any set of Mishnah. But, what? Generally, there are a few exceptions, but generally speaking, but Dafke in Avot, you have this problem. Avot is always right. The way the I don't know what the source for this is, but the way the Mishnayot are conventionally printed in the Siddur often follow a different chalukah of the Mishnayot within the Perek than the way they appear in the Mishnayot.
So there's more Madarot, and so more Madarot, there's probably more opportunities for things to go
through. But But it didn't. It didn't have to be this way. So, but within any one perek, they can assume that, you know, that you're playing on the same field. So that's the end of this sugya. Just let's just look at the Mishnah on top of Ayin Aleph Omer Aleph. So that's the din of Nitrokna. That's the din of Nitrokna. The Nadra Vehi Arusa. Right, we're still talking about Anara Hamurasa. Nadra Vehi Arusa. Nitkasha bo beyom. Nitarsa bo beyom. Afilu Lemea. Aviha uva Allah ha'achron mefirin. Rivka gets engaged. She's a lovely girl, 12 and a quarter. She gets engaged to Reuven. Right? It was a very busy day. Reuven, who knows what? He was rude, he picked his nose, whatever it was, she didn't like him. She says, Daddy, he's not the boy for me. They get divorced. They were never fully married, but they still need a divorce to break the Erusin. She had a neder on the books. Right? During their brief engagement, they did not get involved in the breaking up of this neder. Right? She gets engaged to Shimon on the same day. Who has rights over that neder? That neder was made
before.
She was already married and divorced.
Who? You would think Shimon, because he's the one who's going to live with the implication.
And that is exactly what the Mishnah says. Ba'ala aviyu v'ala achron mefirin nedereha ze haklal. Afilu me'a. She gets married and divorced 100 times in one day. Rabbinically, this is not possible, but technically it would work. Why the Mishnah has to make this outlandish, give this outlandish scenario of 100 husbands in one day?
Two husbands in one day
seems a bit of an exaggeration, but would have.
It's a language to say no matter how many times in the course.
You know, this goes back. It goes to the late husbands. Even if there's such.
This keeps happening.
Distance. That's where.
Right.
Why
distance
why
distance between
right.
the current husband.
Once you've said Reuven and Shimon, what do you have to list the other 98? Okay.
Because if it was just Reuven and Shimon, you would say, okay, so Shimon might have known about this.
The whole thing happens on one day. The whole thing happens on one day.
Why do we care if she was engaged? Meaning, what they meant she was.
Because
engaged.
The question
no.
is...
If she's not engaged, then it's just the fault. The whole parak is dealing with the case of...
But if she made the netter and then she got engaged... The husband has no rights on that netter?
No, he does. He does. I've told you you can join the shir, but I don't want to hear it from three rows back. If it's on that day, the new husband, she made a netter, then she got at 12 o'clock, she got engaged at 1 o'clock, he has half the rights over her netter. She got engaged at 12 o'clock. The father, on his own, was Mayfair at 12:30, she gets engaged at 1, so...
Right, it's ready to go.
So how can Shimon and Mayfair not be here?
They tell her.
He didn't hear.
Assuming they get engaged, Mazel Tov, and they say, this morning she made this neder. If he didn't hear about it, then at whatever point it says Yom Sham'o, so then...
Okay, but there's no...
Keep the case simple, but lo mishaneh.
No, so you don't need to. I mean, just the first time, I mean, if she made a neder before she was engaged, even to Reuven.
Yeah.
And there's no need to have been at the time of the neder. I mean, clearly this is talking about Leila, but it seems strange to me that the concept of Yom Shema wouldn't require, there wouldn't be an expectation that at the time of the, what's Yom Shema? I was saying that when it was heard, assuming that it was like, something happened at the time she made the neder, something changed. He had no authority at the time the neder was made. So why would he suddenly have authority later on?
That's when he gets engaged. He acquires those. He acquires those half rights.
But the Yom Shomo applies even before they're engaged. In other words, if she makes a note before she's engaged, he knows about it. So I don't think that the day they engage, you can't do a
hafara. This is all on the same day.
She makes a note.
This is all on the same day.
She makes a note at 8 o'clock in
the morning. What's the difference?
This is a different case.
What's the difference if she makes the bed 2 weeks ago and then she gets engaged and you heard about it 2 weeks ago and then the day that you get engaged, she wants to do hafara, you can't do it.
No, but if it's all on the same day.
No, but
if they get engaged on the day she makes the neder, they get engaged the day she makes the neder, but he doesn't hear about it. Right? So his Yom Shamo is tomorrow when he hears about it.
But that's what he's saying at that point. If let's talk about Reuven Shimon, because I think that makes it a little bit easier. Maybe just Reuven.
But this is not the din of Mishnah's tool.
With this case, can he or can he not make for the neder that day?
He can.
Engaged.
He can. Whoever the last husband is.
No, but in the case that he gave, she made a neder 2 weeks ago. They get engaged today. He can be made for the neder today.
No.
Ah, so it was the question.
Because the father...
Father wasn't...
On the day she got engaged, 2 weeks before the engagement, it was the father's right to be Mekayim or to be Mayfair. If he was Mekayim, or did a pocket kiyum by allowing the sun to set.
This is why it's only placed in Aram Murasa.
Correct. This is a case of an Aram Murasa.
It has to only be a case of an Aram Murasa. Correct. Otherwise it wouldn't
then there's no husband. There's not an Aram Murasa. There's no Aros. This is
the father didn't hear.
So
I don't know. I don't know. Nobody heard about it. Neither the father nor. The Mishnah goes on. Zehaklal. Kol shelo yatsa lirshut atzma sha'achat aviha uva'ala ha'achron mefirin nedareha. You can have all on the same day, but if it wasn't sha'achat, the Gemara will ask, what does that mean, sha'achat? And even one day, right, where she was not under her husband, and not under her father, and not yet under her husband, so then you have the Nara Murasa, where you have the co-signatories on her Lurshut Atzma Shelo Niset Le'echad Mehen O Shelo Bagra B'toch Hazman Avi O Va'ala have mutual rights, says Rashi.
The Lurshut Atzma in this case, because her father always has Lurshut.
Right, because she hasn't Kol Od, she hasn't turned 12 and a half, or become fully married to her husband, or right, so then she's under this mutual jurisdiction of the Arus and the father.
The status of the husband, it could be Reuven, Shimon, Levi, it doesn't make a difference how many there are. The father is, there's no break in the father's rights here.
Unless she becomes fully married. Correct. The Ran says, "Zehaklal kol shelo yatzel rishut atzma sha'achat shelo bagra velo nis'et." She neither turned 12 and turned 12 and a half, nor did she get fully married. De'i bagra o nis'et, if she had turned 12 and a half, or she had a chuppah, yatza mirishut av ve'arus lechudei lo matzim efer. Mirshut Av, va'arus luchudei lo matzim efer. I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Let me read that again. Shelo bagra velo niset. De'i bagra, if she turned 12 and a half. O niset, or she got a chuppah. Yatzah mirshut Av. She's left her husband's she's left her father's domain, and as long as she hasn't yet gotten married, her arus alone has no rights. Okay, we'll continue with the Gemara here next week. Oh, Chag Sameach.